Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hazing on college campuses across this country continues to be a problem. A case finally goes to trial, and former LSU student Matthew Nockan was found guilty of negligent homicide in the death of Phi Delta Theta pledge Max Groover. Does anybody learn a lesson as a result of these tragic circumstances? Here to talk to us about it is David Eastlick, hazing and risk management special fraternity law anti-hazing expert witness. David, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Neil. Good to talk to you.
So, David, you and I have talked several times about these occurrences across the country and the problems with the national fraternity organizations, and, you know, not very many of these cases actually get tried in a criminal court. This one makes it through the process, and a student, former student, Matthew Nockan, found guilty of negligent homicide.
It only took an hour for the jury to reach the verdict, so it was apparently pretty obvious to everybody he was guilty. And that's going to be, that should send a lesson or message out to the people out there that, you know, you can go to jail on this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, when we think about the reverberations, the last time you and I talked, the thing that I found the most obnoxious were these national organizations, and we talked about the fact, I think, that they're now in the self-insurance business, and that has become more of a moneymaker for them than in any of the other businesses that they're in. And, they're just really, they're getting into community colleges now. They're trying to grow this thing as an industry. And this whole hazing thing, it's kind of a wink-wink situation. And I'm wondering, you know, not only is it tragic what happened to Max Groover, but now we have the tragedy of this kid's life, Matthew Nockan, is ruined forever.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the message that's got to get out there. I mean, if the kids understand that if they haze and something happens, they're going to go to jail. I mean, hopefully that'll be one good way to teach them not to do it. I mean, that's the message. I talked to the Groovers last night, and I talked to their lawyer in this civil case, and, you know, that they basically want the news to be to send a message to the country that hazing is dangerous and it can't be accepted or tolerated at all. And, you know, this is the lesson to get to the undergraduates. Now, their lawyer is more saying, now that this is over with, we're going to be focused on holding LSU and the fraternity liable for the outrageous conduct described at the trial that should have been prevented through proper supervision and management. That's what needs to happen. I mean, you know, they've got to stop, you know, basically being in the insurance business and, you know, expanding and trying to avoid liability. And they've got to just supervise the heck out of these kids because they're just absolutely dropping the responsibility. I mean, it's, you know, these are trademark organizations. These people belong to their organization and they don't take any responsibility for them.
Yeah. You know, I wonder, one of the things that came out during the trial in this case, Matthew Nockan was also charged with obstruction of justice, and it seems as though he had deleted a number, a bunch of information off of his cell phone in advance of, and I think he knew that they were coming after the cell phone for information as a result of a subpoena or search warrant that had been issued, and the FBI, I think, testified that he had deleted that and tried to circumvent their attempts to get a hold of communications both pre, during, and post-incident. It seems as though in even the way that the handbook of some of these organizations in reporting and how to delay that and try to get their hands around the messaging and so forth, it just seems to never end.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that these kids basically communicate with each other through these kind of mass programs where it's sort of a secret little group, and it's something called GroupMe usually, and that's, you know, you all chat in this little group and you've all got a nickname, and they're saying horrible things, and I'm sure that's why he deleted the 700 emails, because, I mean, you know, these may be exaggerated, they may be just statements, locker room type language, but I mean, the stuff that shows up, and I, as expert witness, get to see some of this stuff. I mean, because the telephone companies give them right to you, and it's insane what these kids are putting out there.
So what do you think is the next step for LSU? I mean, you know, obviously they've banned this fraternity until 2033. I know that there's been some policy changes. I mean, do you go to the point where you have surprise visits? Do you have camera monitoring on the outside of these fraternity homes? I mean, where does it go?
Well, where it has to go is basically the house mothers and house fathers, whatever, have to be hired by the university. They have to be, you know, serious young individuals who, you know, will enforce the rules, and they'll be like an RA or an RD in the residence halls, and they've got to, you know, eliminate alcohol in the houses. I mean, there's nobody living in those fraternity houses that's over 21. So, you know, you can't basically say, hey, you know, this is an organization that basically is here to break the law. And they've got to just take control. And otherwise, you know, as Doug Feuerberg, the lawyer for the Groovers, who's going to handle the $25 million lawsuit, is saying they better learn, and they better learn how to supervise, because, boy, I mean, he's ready to nail them.
And this is not something that's just going on that campus. You and I have talked about other shock the conscience cases throughout the country. And it seems as though there's, I don't know, is reluctance the appropriate word, or just, I don't see an aggressive, in many cases, an aggressive stance by the universities in trying to get their hands around this in many respects.
Well, what's happening now, and I've got a Facebook group called Fraternity Horror Stories and Actions Taken to Stop Them, and I've got on that in that group there about 20 parents of people who've been killed. And they're going around to various campuses, and they're going around to fraternities and sororities, conventions and stuff, and they're speaking to the groups and saying, you got to stop this. And so the parent initiative is what's working, I think. And, you know, the fraternities will say, oh, yeah, we're signing on to something. And they signed on to the latest bill they signed on to is the prevent hazing in the USA bill or something. And all that does is basically disclose anything that the university caught these people doing, and it means nothing.
Well, the one thing is that if you started to eliminate the utilization of federal student loans at those universities, if they don't comply, watch how fast it changes then.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, Harvard has the idea. Basically, they've banned fraternities and sororities there and said, you know, we're not going to do anything about the organizations, but if anybody who's a member of those organizations wants to get a scholarship or perform on an athletic team or whatever, forget it. And, I mean, you know, you start doing stuff like that, and the kids aren't going to be wanting to join a fraternity, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more ways to get at it. You know, the other thing, too, is that in this particular case, and I understand that Matthew Nakhan is, you know, fighting for his life and not wanting to go to jail. I think the potential sentence here is anything from probation to 5 years, as I recall. You know, a lot of it, there's culpability, I think, in a lot of different places.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we have to come to that recognition and realization. But we refer, these are still kids in many respects. And, you know, and when you're entering and when you're the most vulnerable is that freshman year. You're entering into a climate or an environment that is so new to you. You just want to be accepted. So your vulnerabilities are probably a lot greater there than they were just 4 months previous when you were a senior in high school.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember when I went to the University of Michigan and I was in a 16-man class from a private school that was all boys, and I show up in Ann Arbor with 25,000 students, and it was, oh, boy. And I'm sure that's the same kind of thing for kids showing up at LSU or any of these large public schools. I mean, my God, you know, absolutely no parent involvement, no parent supervision, no adult supervision. And that's the missing element here. And the fraternities, you know, they want to have studies done, and they want to do this and they do that and do academic stuff. But, I mean, it's just obvious. You got to put somebody in charge, and it's got to be somebody who's over 21, you know, some sort of adult leadership, and it's not there, and they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
They put in these traveling consultants who are 1 year out of school, and, you know, they're happy to show up and do a keg stand right with the brothers.
Right. Well, hopefully there's something that comes of this, because it's even almost equally and in many respects more tragic if nothing changes.
You know, the thing is that the fraternities are taking the position it is changing, but it isn't. I mean, you know, last time I think I mentioned, you know, it was the Beta Theta Pi chapter house 20 years ago had exactly the same thing happen to a kid that happened to Groover. I mean, you know, 20 years, same thing, same school, same everything.
Yeah, and then there was another one just had recently come off probation, I think. I forgot what state it was in. It might have been Oklahoma or one of them that got into trouble again, and they had just come off of a probation or something, and it's just...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, they need to ban these some of these groups forever, for 20 years or 30 years or something. This 4 year out of there, and you're gonna come back, and nobody's going to be around, is baloney. Yeah. Because what they do is they come back and say, now we're going to be anti-hazing, and they get all these nice little nerd-type persons out in and into the group. But give them one semester, I mean, and they're back absolutely to everything they ever did.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I feel for everybody. I just hope that there's a lesson learned here and things are going to change. David Eastlick, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All righty. That's David Eastlick, hazing and risk management specialist. He's a anti-hazing expert witness in a number of courts throughout the country. We'll be right back. Want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. This is Newell on WWL. What a concert. What a voice. Let's go to Chuck on line one. What say you, Chuck?
Hey, Newell, what's going on?
I was reminiscing about last night, listening to that great bumper music.
The question is, did you dance to Satisfaction the other night?
I did. I danced the whole night. My legs are still hurting. I'm so out of shape, it's ridiculous. But I felt young at that concert. I'm gonna be quite honest with you.
Yeah. Hey, I was calling the guy that was on the line, and he made a comment regarding things haven't changed, and I don't quite agree with that. You know, having son and two daughters just get out of LSU and both in the fraternity and sorority system, there's big changes since when I was there, and then about 10 years after that, but... There's the enforcement it seems to be the issue, but I really believe that the drinking age goes back to it. You know, when we were in school, it was 18 years old, and you never had anyone getting so drunk that they can't stand up. It's just, you know, I think I was hit up by a pulse of what was going on, especially in our fraternity and some of the other bigger ones, but... there was not really that kind of stuff going on, and most of it was beer, but it wasn't the point that you had to go out and get drunk before you go out, just like the football games. The kids, you know, if you watch some of these kids going into the ball games, they can't stand up, and they're trying to go in because they want to stay drunk for the whole game.
So
I do see there are some changes.
There were a lot of people that talked about the fact that when they went away to school, there was a marked difference when Louisiana's drinking age was at 18 and everybody else was at 21 in the way that that Louisiana kids handled drinking and the way that everyone else handled drinking. Because I guess the Louisiana kids had already been there, right? And everybody else was like, it was something new. And and they were all going hog wild crazy. Did you hear those same stories?
Pretty much. And the other part was, even if you didn't drink, you know, there was a lot of people that drank underage. You know, I didn't, but once it became legal, I did my fair share of drinking. But there wasn't that pressure to drink either. Today, there just seems to be that whole push. Now, I might be crazy on this one, too, but I kind of, you know, following up on all these deaths and drink and accidents over the last years because, the kids being up there, it seems to be the people from out of town or out of state, more out of state. You know, the boys from Texas that had an issue, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Right.
This poor fella, the boy that just died. And whether they can acclimate to and I hate to use the word system, but, you know, most of our parents and everything, you know, kept a good eye on us and let us know what was right and wrong. Not saying that those other people did, but the fact remains just weren't used to it.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this, and this is another part of that story with that fraternity. A good friend of ours, his son was a member of that fraternity, and as a pledge, he quit when that ritual came down.
Yeah.
And he wound up walking away. And I was really surprised, but it was what was instilled in him that, hey, I'm not going to put up with this crap, you know, of making me drink grain alcohol. And
yeah. Well, it's good to hear that kids can still make good decisions based on, the guidance that their parents have given them. Chuck, thanks so much for calling in. Got to get to a news break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.